Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about the Minnesota National Guard's Enhanced Response Force, or SERFP, and see the SOAR program and how it helps out our at-risk veterans. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, the weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Serving in the military can be a challenge. Our missions can be dangerous, and sometimes we're away from our families for longer than we'd like. Being in a military family can also be challenging, and juggling all of our family and military duties can sometimes get the best of us. I want you to know that when times get tough, there's a group of folks ready to lend a hand. They are the people of our Minnesota Military Family Assistance Centers. Located in 10 communities across Minnesota, our Family Assistance Centers can help with ID cards, financial and legal concerns, TRICARE information, and can also offer referrals to community resources and networks. Participation is voluntary, confidential, and open to family members of all services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, both active and reserve component. To learn more or to locate a Family Assistance Center near you, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org or call 612-618-6927. That's 612-618-6927.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. A Regional Response Force Package, also referred to as SERFP, contains a command and control element, a search and extraction element, a decontamination element, a medical element, and a fatality search and recovery team. And joining us today to talk about SERFP, and we'll find out what that means in a minute, is Major Mike Graves. Major, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, sir, and thanks for having me.
Sir, SERFP is an acronym, and it's got a long explanation. Can you share that with us once?
Yes, sir. Acronym within an acronym. So the C stands for chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosive. And then the E stands for enhanced, R stands for response, F stands for force, and P stands for package.
So are we okay if we call it an enhanced response force today, just to keep it a little simple, sir?
Yes, sir.
Major, can you tell us how long you've been in the service?
I have been in the service for 23 years, started my career in active duty, transitioned to National Guard, and 7 years ago I began, again, an active career as an active guard.
Full-time?
Yes, sir.
And I understand you spent 3.5 years in the Joint Operations Center.
I did, sir.
And that was probably pretty good preparation for your position today.
It was. It was a higher level, so it was at the state level, so overall state response and domestic operations. Be it wildfire, flood, winter storm response, pretty much anything.
And now you're referred to as the SERFP officer in charge or commander.
Yes, sir.
Part of the 84th Troop Command, is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right, Major, myself as host, we've been doing this for 8 years now, and we've talked to a lot of different elements of the Minnesota National Guard. We've talked about how you go out and fight fires and fight floods, and we've had the 55th Civil Support Team on the show, and now we've got SERFP, the Enhanced Response Force. Can you tell me how is that all organized within the Minnesota National Guard? We every spring we have Director Kelly from Homeland Security here in Minnesota on the show, along with one of the general officers from the Minnesota National Guard, and we talk about, okay, is it going to flood this year? How are we going to handle it? And my understanding is if we need troops to help with floods, we try to find troops that are stationed close to the area that you need them. Could you explain to us how does that differ from the 55th, and how does that differ from SERFP?
Well, it differs in that the 55th Civil Support Team and the 55th SERFP, our primary mission is domestic operations. When it comes to flood and wildfire and winter storm response, usually the units that we're asking to do those kinds of missions haven't officially really been tasked with that mission per se. They've got their go-to-war mission that they train for. So it's kind of an impromptu ask of them.
So the underlying part of the training for all of you is your soldiers, and you need to know how to soldier if you're called out to go to war. But here on the civilian side, if there is a flood, if there are summer fires, if there's something, then the Guard stands ready to help. And of course, if there's the 55th Civil Support Team, is kind of, are they the first responder of the Minnesota National Guard?
The 55th Civil Support Team would be considered to be a first responder to chemical and biological and radiological events primarily. So they will deploy within 1 to 3 hours when they're requested, and they're responsible for going out and detecting whatever that hazard is and identifying that hazard.
And they do some great work to keep us all safe because when we've had them on, they've told stories about doing sweeps of sporting stadiums and making sure that they're clear of any radiological or nuclear things. And the stories that they told us, we talked about at lunch a little bit, about sweeping the Metrodome one time and finding a gentleman that had a medical procedure the day before. It's pretty impressive, and it made me feel really good about going to these sporting events like Vikings football games.
Yes, sir.
So it's nice to have those guys out there with those capabilities. But then you respond second to them?
We are. It's a tiered response, so we have a very good relationship in the enhanced response force package with the civil support team. So the civil support team, again, they're usually the first in as far as a military element is concerned, and they do that detection and identification of whatever the hazard is. We would be that next tiered response coming in 6 hours from the incident or from when we were requested. And we come in and basically, based upon whatever the hazard is identified, we respond in kind, depending on what that hazard is. With it could be any number of the elements that you mentioned on the intro of the show, or all of the elements to respond to that incident.
So we can think of the enhanced response force kind of as reinforcements.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and it goes beyond detection and monitoring. So when we come in, search and extraction of victims to whatever the hazard might have been, as well as decontamination, medical treatment.
So how would you define your mission then for the enhanced response forces?
Our mission is purely to boil it down is to support local, state, tribal, federal authorities, save lives, mitigate human suffering.
So if there's some type of an emergency going on, the first tier would be the local response, and that would be like fire, rescue, law enforcement, those type of folks?
Yes, sir.
And second tier, we get to the state of Minnesota, and the 55th Civil Support Team goes in first, and you follow up?
Yes, sir.
And then if needed, the third tier would be a federal response?
The third tier would actually be the Homeland Response Force, which is similar to the SERF-P. It's just a little bit bigger, and they come out of Ohio.
Okay, we're talking to Major Mike Graves from SERF-P on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, when there is an emergency, we talked about the fact that the local response, the first responders are there. There's all kinds of resources available, and we've had Homeland Security here in Minnesota on the show. We've talked about that and the Guard and everybody, but who's in charge of the situation when there is an emergency?
The incident commander. So it's generally at the local level. All emergencies are local.
So that could be the police chief or the fire chief or maybe the sheriff, something like that?
Yes, sir.
And then all the other resources that are available are there to say, okay, what do we got and what do you need?
Yes, we are all there to support the incident commander.
And as we said earlier when we opened the show, you have various elements of the enhanced response force. So you can help with command and control. You can do search and extraction, decontamination, got some medical help, and fatality search and recovery team. So when you get on the scene and ask them, what's going on, what do you need, how can we help, then you can call in the appropriate people to do that.
Yes, sir.
That sounds pretty organized, Major.
Yeah, it is.
It works well, doesn't it?
It's a process.
Now, do you get a chance to train with all of those parts, all those elements that are under your command, and with Homeland Security and local authorities?
We do. We do. We do at a minimum 2 collective training exercises a year, one that's evaluated by National Guard Bureau. So that's with the entire team. And then throughout the year during drill periods, we're usually focused in on individual training and equipment readiness. And then we also do train with our interagency partners. So that would include Minnesota Task Force 1, which does a mission similar to what the SERF-P does with fire departments as far as search and extraction. It could be with Department of Health and Human Services with the radiological emergency preparedness. So those are primarily the state agencies we work with.
So in a lot of the training is about getting to know each other and what your capabilities are and how to work together. So when you do have an emergency, you're not trading business cards.
It is. It's all about relationships and training together.
The major, an example, I think we talked about a little bit was we hosted the Super Bowl here in Minnesota this year. And I know Homeland Security and the Minnesota National Guard, and there were all kinds of people working together to make sure that that was safe and turned out to be pretty well. But the Minnesota National Guard had about 700 soldiers and airmen, I'm told, backing up the Minneapolis police. Were you training at the same time?
The SERFP was training at the same time, so a conscious decision was made to hold a collective training exercise at that time at Camp Ripley, so if needed, we could respond more quickly.
So you'd have everybody together, and if there was some type of emergency, get them down here and get after it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it would only take, how long it takes to drive from Camp Ripley to the metropolitan area.
Or fly if certain elements if you needed to,
if we needed to, yes.
All right. Well, that sounds like that was a great use of what a wonderful event for the Twin Cities to show off all of our facilities and our people. And of course, the Minnesota National Guard were doing a fantastic job of backing up the Minneapolis police. Looking back on it, I'm told that all went off about as well as could be hoped for.
Yeah, from our perspective, definitely. And it was great getting to work with all those law enforcement agencies, and Minneapolis Police Department did a great job taking the lead.
All about training, 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 isn't it, Major?
It is.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the various elements that make up your SERFP and what components are there and what they can do. We're speaking with Major Mike Graves from the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we've been talking about SERFP, which is talks about the soldiers and airmen of chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and high-yield explosive enhanced response force package with their commander from the 84th Truth Command, Major Mike Graves. And Major, I don't think we need to go through all of those names again.
No.
We've been referring to this as the Enhanced Response Force. I'll get this right by the end of the show, sir. And we refer to that also as SERFP. Now, that's made up of several components, as we discussed in the first segment. And really, there's four different elements: command and control, search and extraction, decontamination, and medical. I'd like to break those down, Major, if we could. Can we start with command and control? Is that pretty much your 84th Troop Command, or do you draw on other soldiers as well?
Yeah, as far as the command and control is concerned, that is primarily drawn from that 84th Troop Command headquarters in Cambridge, as well as liaisons from each of the elements that I'm going to talk about a little bit more in depth. So we've got representatives from each of our elements up there in the command and control. So we make sure that we're managing the incident with all of those elements per whatever the incident commander needs. So we also provide a liaison to the incident commander as soon as we get on the ground and start working for that incident commander.
So as we talked in the first segment, if there's some type of an emergency, there's usually a local response and a local person that's in charge of the site and the scene. And then all of the other resources that are available liaison with them or that person to find out what do you need and how fast do you need it, and then work together to try to bring all of those resources to bear.
Yes, sir.
So that's on behalf of SERFP, or the Enhanced Response Force. That's your job as command and control to find out what the situation is, figure out what needs to be done, and who you can pull in to accomplish that.
Yes, sir. It's my job to make sure that we're meeting the incident commander's objectives.
And give him everything he needs to resolve the problem.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then the second element of that is extraction, search and extraction team. When would they be called in, and what type of resources do they have and capabilities?
Well, the search and extraction would be kind of the first level of our response. So they can do rope rescues, confined space rescues, and they can do that all in a contaminated environment. So they wear what we call level C suits, and they also have respirators. So they can work in a contaminated environment in those suits and do those rope rescues, confined space rescues. So they've got a tough job. They're all part of our engineer battalion, our 682nd Engineer Battalion, that's headquartered out of St. Cloud.
So depending on if there's a chemical spill or some type of an explosion, If it's a contaminated site, they can dress appropriately and they've got all the gear and the training and they're in good shape. They can go in and do what's necessary to help get survivors out or to help find fatalities.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and that job in particular is very, very strenuous, especially when they're in their suits.
I'll bet, especially in the summertime when it gets real hot, that's got to be miserable.
It is.
Not quite so bad in the wintertime. A little extra cover is okay. So, and those people come from, you said, the 850th Engineers in Cambridge?
They come from the 850th Engineers, who are under our 682nd Engineers, also out of St. Cloud.
Okay, and then says you have access also to the 434th Chemical Company based out of Northfield, Minneapolis, and Red Wing.
We do.
Is that part of that same step?
It's part of that same step. They primarily resource our decontamination element, which is that next step in our response. So if you picture it as our search and extraction team, as they're bringing people out of a rubble pile or whatever it might be, they're handing them off to the decontamination team to be decontaminated.
So if there was chemical or some kind of biological, then that next team would know how to get people cleaned up and minimize the injuries.
They do. They take care of both. You know, if it's an incapacitated patient, we've got a line that we run people through decontamination on, or walking wounded that are contaminated. We also have a decontamination line for that.
And then once they're stabilized, then do you have a medical team as well that can take the next step?
We do. So that next step is our medical element, and they're out of the 133rd Air Wing down at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. So that's our team of doctors, physician's assistants, nurses, pharmacists, an entire medical team that'll take that handoff from the decontamination team, and they will triage, stabilize, perform life-saving measures, and then coordinate for their transportation to the next level of response to a hospital.
And where would that transportation element come from?
The transportation element would come from those local hospitals, so an ambulance probably moving those folks from our medical team.
An air ambulance like we see flying around once in a while. And if this was something that was out in the country and a factory blew up or something like that, would the guard ever get involved in helping to transport if there were massive casualties?
Potentially so.
And we have the capability of that with our aircraft and our
helicopters. We do have that capability with the helicopters. Civilian authorities also have a pretty robust capability. The only issue with our helicopters, it's tough to land those in some places, but they can carry patients.
Okay. We're talking with Major Mike Graves from the SERF-P, or the Rapid Enhanced Response Force of the Minnesota National Guard, on Minnesota Military Radio. Major, can you give us an example? You know, we talk about chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear. It would seem in Minnesota that the opportunity for maybe a train that was passing through the state to derail. I know you have the facilities up at Camp Ripley to practice dealing with some of those. Is that the realistic type of thing that you train for?
It's something that could happen. You know, for us as the Enhanced Response Force or the Civil Support Team could potentially respond to a derailed train incident, depending on what the hazard was.
Major, it would seem that a big part of what you do is, like, much like the rest of the Minnesota National Guard, is training and trying to be ready for any emergency, but you're actually hoping that there's not going to be an emergency and you don't get called out and have to do these things. So training is important. We've got a good location up in at Camp Ripley, but I understand you do some training over in Wisconsin as well.
We do at Volk Field. They've got great facilities there, as well as a exercise support team. It's in particular has a good facility for us for our search and extraction team to train on collapsed structures.
So they've got some special capabilities over there that allow you to practice better?
They do, sir.
And you're smiling, so you must enjoy going over there and training and getting your troops ready.
We do. We do enjoy going there.
So a good partnership with Wisconsin on that deal.
Yes, them, as well as the Wisconsin also has a SERF-P, so we talk to them a lot, obviously. So, you know, there is a potential that, you know, not only do we train together on occasion, but that we could respond together with Wisconsin.
So if there was a big emergency, let's say over in Michigan, and they didn't have enough troops, they could call in some Wisconsin troops, maybe call in some from Minnesota, and just flow to the emergency and deal with whatever's necessary, depending on what it might be.
They could. If that governor would request us, and our governors and our adjutants general would approve, we could go.
And they've already got a plan in place for working together in such events. I know that we heard last year about some fires out in Montana, and we had some Minnesota National Guard troops out there helping with fires. And so there must be some pretty good working agreements between the states to help each other and make sure that you've got the equipment and the people you need to deal with whatever's going on.
There are. Every year, all 54 states and territories get together and talk about that very thing, how we can help each other.
Well, that's going to make our listeners feel pretty good that not only do we have the local response from our first responders, we're backed up by the state response and the Minnesota National Guard. And if it gets too big, we can call on other states. And if it gets bigger than that, we can call on the federal troops to come in and help, much like the Navy divers came in to help when the bridge collapsed.
Yes, sir.
Now, Major, we helped with the hurricane problems last year. Can you tell us what was needed there and how you were involved?
We did actually a lot in support of all the hurricanes, you know, starting out with Harvey and then Irma and Maria. We obviously provided a lot of helicopter support to all the incidents. And then as far as the SURF-P was concerned, we did provide our communications platform and communications personnel that are stationed out of the 133rd Air Wing. So that's another thing that we can give to the incident commander here is that platform, that communications platform, and six personnel that come along with it. But we can provide commercial phone, we can provide internet to include Wi-Fi internet, and we can also bridge radio communications. So that asset did get deployed to Puerto Rico to bridge communications for the local government there.
So that hurricane was severe enough, it just wiped out most of Puerto Rico. And you don't know where people are needing help. You don't know where people need first responders. You don't know what you need. So communications is pretty critical, isn't it?
Very critical. So they did a great job there in helping the local government.
Now, is that communications section, is that actually part of the folks that report to the 84th Troop Command?
They are kind of an element of their own. So it's our communications element. So six personnel, and they again can provide that internet commercial phone service. They can bridge radio capabilities between agencies. So they're there not only to support us, but they're there to support the incident commander as well.
So once again, down in Puerto Rico, the first thing was to put some communications in place so you could find out what was needed. And then you back that up by saying, okay, what do we need and where and where can we get it? And then start calling those people in and start dealing with the most critical problems first.
Yes, sir.
I'll bet that was a heck of an exercise, and a whole lot of American people needed some help down in Puerto Rico, didn't they?
They did, sir.
I was happy to hear that you were there, and we heard that with the other tornadoes or the other hurricanes and floods last year that Minnesota National Guard sent troops whenever they were asked. Just from a casual observer, I felt pretty good about our Minnesota National Guard troops helping with emergencies all around America.
Yes, sir. Army Aviation and the Air National Guard did a great job.
It's got to make you feel good about being part of the Minnesota Army National Guard, sir.
It does.
Major, we just got about a minute and a half left. You've been in the service, active duty and guard for 23 years, and you're training to be right at the forefront of these emergencies. If we had some of our listeners out there that were thinking about a career in the Minnesota Army National Guard, what would you tell them?
I'd tell them it's a great decision. It'll take you a long way.
You've learned a lot, and you've made a lot of good friends among your military family.
I have.
And now you're in charge of training, I understand, and so you're training our soldiers so that when they're called upon, they're ready to go.
I am, yes.
Well, Major, we've just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts about the enhanced response force?
No, sir. I just thank you for your time. I thank you for your listeners' time, and thanks for your support and interest.
Well, Major, on behalf of my listeners, I'd like to tell you that I feel a whole lot better after talking to you today, knowing about the capabilities we have in the Minnesota National Guard to step up and take care of all of our citizens of Minnesota, and everything from making sure sporting events are safe to emergencies to floods to all of those things. And thank you for serving, and thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, sir.
That was Major Mike Graves talking about the SURF-P program on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to see how the SOAR program helps our at-risk veterans to obtain help. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
Through the Program and Services Division of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, We assist veterans from all eras of conflict, ensuring they are connected to the benefits and resources they have earned through their service. We recognize that while veterans have made tremendous sacrifices for this country, families serve too and are eligible for many federal, state, and local programs. We administer and highlight a number of health and disability-related programs for Minnesota veterans and their families. These include benefits and services in the areas of disability claims, outreach, dental, optical, special needs, homelessness prevention, and health information on issues like depleted uranium and hepatitis C. For personal assistance and more information on these programs, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org or contact your county veteran service officer.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelledo. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Today we're going to talk about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs SOAR program and veterans homelessness in Minnesota. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has partnered with the Minnesota Department of Human Services and the United States Social Security Administration to provide Minnesota's homeless and at-risk veterans with expanded access to Social Security income and Social Security disability insurance benefits. For those who are eligible, who are experiencing or at risk of homelessness and have a mental illness, medical impairment, and or co-occurring substance abuse disorder. And joining me now to talk about these issues is Paul Williams and Ben Wilson. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, thanks for having us, Tom.
Thank you.
Paul, I want to start with you, fellow Air Force, Air National Guard
That's
veteran.
Right.
Can you tell us about your time in the service?
Yeah, I served with the 119th Wing, the Air National Guard in Fargo, North Dakota. Worked in liquid fuel systems maintenance, so kind of took care of the fuel systems on base, maintaining pump houses, storage tanks, things like that, and deployed to Kuwait towards the end of my enlistment. So.
And how did you get over to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
So I had worked previously with Disability Determination Services, which is a state agency that makes decisions on Social Security claims. And so when the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs was looking to start this SOAR program, they were looking for someone that had a little bit of expertise with that claims process. And so they brought me on board and we're off and running.
Okay, and Ben, you also work at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and I understand you're an Army veteran of the Iraq War.
I am, yes. Yeah, I served with Able Troop 1 of the 9-4 Cav out of Hibbing and deployed to Iraq in 2011 to 2012, and we did convoy escort missions for the drawdown in the war in Iraq.
And how did you get to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Previously, I worked with the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, the statewide nonprofit, and I was both a case manager and the statewide program administrator for the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, or MACV.
And were you also a veteran service officer?
I was not a veteran service officer, but I am accredited with the VVA and American Legion.
So that you could help claims processing?
Correct, yes.
Very good. That's pretty good background. And now you're working for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs as the Homeless Veteran Coordinator.
Correct, yeah.
Can you tell us what all is entailed in that job?
Oh, boy. Well, it entails quite a bit, but I'll tell you kind of my main duty is to administer our Homeless Veteran Registry, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show. And what that is it's a statewide by-name list of every veteran who's experiencing homelessness. And what we do is we partner with a very wide variety of community partners throughout the state, and we work through that list of names every other week to try to come up with a housing outcome or at least next steps for every veteran with all of those partners at the table.
Now, Ben, seems like there's a lot of organizations working on that. You mentioned MACV. That's one of their primary focuses, and the Minneapolis VA Medical Center also gets involved in this, and there are several organizations in the state that are all working together to solve this problem, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a really wide variety of community organizations, veteran-specific and non-veteran-specific, that we work with to make sure that we're really providing an all-encompassing sort of resolution to any crisis that a veteran's experiencing.
All right, Ben. In segment two, we're going to come back to that veterans registry, so hang on to that thought.
All right.
But I want to go to Paul now, and we've mentioned the acronym SOAR. Paul, can you explain to us what that means?
Yeah, SOAR stands for SSI, SSDI, Outreach, Access, and Recovery.
So that's Social Security and Social Security disability.
Exactly. Yep.
And what's the purpose of SOAR? What's the process? How does it work?
So the Veteran SOAR program really revolves around connecting at-risk veterans and veterans who are experiencing homelessness with Social Security disability benefits. And there's two primary benefits to Social Security. It's sustained monthly income and access to health insurance. So we're going to work one-on-one with those veterans to help them navigate what can be a complicated Social Security process, just to make sure that everything moves slowly, forms are turned in on time, things like that, and kind of help mitigate any factors that that might slow down or delay a decision on their claim.
So part of the process with our homeless veterans, identify them, get them off the streets, get them somewhere to live, get them a job, get them some kind of income so that they can get back on their feet and start supporting themselves.
That's exactly right, yep.
So you work pretty closely with Ben, I would guess.
Very closely, yep.
Now, what type of veterans that might be homeless, I'm assuming they're not all eligible for SOAR benefits.
Right, so there's the three basic eligibility criteria are they need to be a Minnesota veteran, have a severe impairment. That can be, as you mentioned before, mental, a physical impairment, or a co-occurring substance use substance use impairment that keeps them from being able to work. So it has to prevent them from working. And the third is that they're either experiencing homelessness or there's a risk of them becoming homeless.
So if they fall in one of those categories, do you help them apply for that type of benefit?
Yep. Well, they can contact us via the Link Vet line, and then we'll reach out to them, can kind of discuss our program with them a little bit, and then kind of discuss their situation and see how we can best help them moving forward.
So they can contact you at 1-888-LINK-VET or visit the registry webpage at minnesotaveteran.org.
Yep, that's exactly right.
All right, gentlemen. I want to come back to you for a minute, Ben. I would guess that once you've identified and you start working through the homeless veterans, there must be other resources like SOAR, and is it your job to figure out who can have the best impact on a case-by-case basis?
Absolutely, yeah. So as a group, we're all sort of sitting around the table looking at that list, and as we work through every veteran's record, we're really looking at the unique the unique circumstances of their current crisis to definitely, like you said, identify exactly what the next step should be in order to provide that sustainability.
So you're looking at some of the causes, like what caused them to spiral down and become homeless, and how can we fix some of those things, and how can we help them get a door, get a home, and establish some income and get back on their feet?
Absolutely, yeah. We try to really focus on what is impacting their housing. And we try to keep the conversation as concise as possible around that, just to really make sure that we're focusing on their housing first.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about veterans homelessness in Minnesota and the SOAR program to help those homeless veterans. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today about veterans homelessness and the resources available to help veterans. And one of them is just this. The Homeless Veteran Registry works by connecting federal, state, county, and nonprofit partners in a shared goal of providing housing and services to veterans and their families. Once a veteran is in the registry, these partners work together in a case management approach to create successful and sustainable housing solutions. Veterans can join the registry directly or be referred. Anyone who knows of a homeless veteran is encouraged to call 1-888-LINK-VET or visit the registry webpage at minnesotaveteran.org. And we've been talking to Paul Williams from the SOAR program and Ben Wilson, who is the homeless veterans coordinator. And Ben, can you elaborate a little bit on that? That's how you get a homeless veteran registered. Once they're registered, what happens? What's the process?
Yeah, definitely. So basically what happens is they come onto our by name list, and we, as you mentioned, our federal partners, federal VA, Community Resource and Referral Center here in the Minneapolis, and then also we partner with the Fargo VA, the Sioux Falls VA, and St. Cloud VAs as well are all participating in that call, along with the state, so the Department of Veterans Affairs, our SOAR team, our county veteran service officers partake in that, SSVF grantees, the Supportive Services for Veteran Families.
Okay. SS, what was that?
SSVF.
Which
yeah.
stands for?
It's the Supportive Services for Veteran Families grant.
Okay.
There's two grantees in Minnesota, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans and TRICAP in central Minnesota. And so along, you know, them along with many other partners, we work through that list. We really focus on each veteran's unique circumstances to come up with the best solution to get them housed as soon as possible.
So the steps there, identify the veterans, figure out the closest agency that can work well with the veteran, depending on where he is or she. I hope there aren't too many women homeless out there. And then on a case-by-case basis, try to figure out what caused them to be homeless, how to fix those problems, and how to get them back on their feet. And sometimes there's legal issues. Sometimes there's health issues. There's all kinds of things that could have caused a veteran to spiral down, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's really focusing in on what needs to be done next, either that next step or what is the most appropriate next course of action.
And, of course, one of the agencies you deal with and you were with was MACV, and they still have stand-downs all over the state in Minnesota. And it's my understanding that they bring some judges out to those get-togethers in case there is some kind of a legal problem or a driver's problem or some pending litigation, and they bring out members from the either Minneapolis or St. called VA in case there's some emergency medical issues as well.
Yeah, it's a very valuable resource during those stand-down events, and we've also actually with all of our registry partners started to the last couple of years, at least at the Metro stand down, we've done a housing team. So if any veteran identifies as homeless as they walk in the door, we try to get them at least into shelter that night, if we're able to, before they even enter the stand down event.
So, very good. Move quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one of the resources, as we talked about earlier with Paul, is SOAR. Can you tell us what that is again one more time?
Yeah, so SSI, SSDI, your Social Security Disability Outreach, Access, and Recovery. So really, really just focusing on connecting at-risk veterans and veterans who are experiencing homelessness with those Social Security disability benefits.
So there's a lot of agencies that have a seat at the table and they just take the veterans on a case-by-case basis?
Yep. And really the key to our early successes with the Veterans SOAR program is our strong partnerships with the Minnesota Department of Human Services and the Social Security Administration. We work really closely with them to kind of help streamline processes and solve potential problems that veterans might run into throughout the course of the claims process. So we do continue to see a higher approval rate than the state and national SOAR averages. So it's really encouraging for us to see. And we've really seen a lot of really inspirational examples of kind of how these Social Security disability benefits can benefit veterans and their families.
It'd make a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Ben, is this working? We've been at this for years now. Are there fewer veterans out on this homeless now?
Yeah, we're seeing some historic outcomes from the registry. We've seen a 56% reduction in veteran homelessness statewide since 2010. And we, our partnerships have only grown, and that is making us stronger and better able to rapidly house veterans. We're still identifying them, but we're able to really rapidly house them as well.
Paul's got to feel good to help our homeless veterans.
It does. There's we talk about it as a SOAR team all the time, how just fortunate we are to wake up and go to a job where we get to make a difference and really, really give veterans that helping hand that they may need.
You guys ever get a chance to check back in with the veterans that you helped last year or the year before and see how they're doing?
Occasionally we do. We do, and it's always rewarding to kind of see, where they were when we started working with them to where they are now and just the difference that these benefits can make.
And, Ben, if any of our listeners want to contact you, they reach out to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, what's the easiest way?
Yeah, LinkVet is probably the best way to get any veteran can get onto the registry. We keep the definition as broad as possible because we want to make sure that we have a chance to talk to every veteran before we exclude them. So 1-888-LINKVET, or you can always call me directly or send me an email. I'm happy to provide that as well.
Or find the information at minnesotaveteran.org.
Absolutely.
Paul, any final thoughts?
I appreciate you having us, and we really just want to make make all veterans across the state of Minnesota and the providers that help them on a daily basis that just aware that these programs exist and can really have life-changing impact on veterans.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for joining us today, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tom.
And for those listeners that might not have caught it, we're going to read this one more time. The Homeless Veteran Registry works by connecting federal, state, county, and nonprofit partners in a shared goal of providing housing and services to veterans and their families. Once a veteran is in the registry, these partners work together in a case management approach to create successful and sustainable housing solutions. Veterans can join the registry directly or be referred. Anyone who knows of a homeless veteran is encouraged to call 1-888-LINK-VET or visit the registry webpage at minnesotaveteran.org. Our guests today have been Paul Williams and Ben Wilson from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major Mike Graves, Paul Williams, Ben Wilson, Commissioner Larry Shelleteau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk about how the PGA HOPE program is helping disabled veterans and meet our new Disabled American Veteran of Minnesota Commander. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at minnesotamilitaryradio.com.